It's a joy to be with you again this weekend. I foolishly thought that since Brother Sonny let me take all the time last weekend, that he'd give me a pass this weekend. And then before we left to go on our vacation, he said, "I think we'll share in the time next Sunday." And I said, "Why would you want to do that?" Then I found out it's his birthday. I mean, you can't even say no to a guy on his birthday. But anyway, I hope and trust that what time we stand before you, the Lord will be with us and that he'll be pleased to dwell with us for a little while. I'd like to look at one verse of Scripture found in the book of Galatians. I don't often preach sermons that are seasonal, but obviously this one, I guess, a little bit is. Galatians 5, verse 1. Apostle Paul writes this. He says, "Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made you free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage." Paul was talking to a church, had been talking to a church for several chapters about a problem they had. And that problem that they had was they had seen the gospel of Jesus Christ. They had rejoiced in the finished work of Christ. And through bad teaching and bewitching, they had gone back into an old law service and felt like you needed to be circumcised and keep the law of Moses in order to be saved and go to heaven. One of the things that Paul labored with this church about in relation to this is that he basically lets them know, look, you've got a great blessing. And that great blessing is you are people who understand the old custom that were delivered to our fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob. But he's basically letting them know that you have seen something in Christ that is not only a change of those things, but it's better. And Paul would go on to talk to the Hebrew people in general in the book of Hebrews about how much better this is. Now, I don't want to dwell so much on what churches of Galatians problem was, because last I checked, I don't think any of y'all have a problem with the idea of being circumcised to go to heaven, right? I don't think that's a problem that plagues Bethel Church. I don't think you believe that you need to keep the law to go to heaven. I don't think you struggle with that. But friends, this verse is still applicable in 2021 because there are things that we struggle with. There is a bondage that we have or that we can be subjected to that Paul says, don't be entangled again in that yoke of bondage. You know, one of the things that I struggle with, and I'm not going to start confessing my sins, you're welcome. You would be very, very upset with me for doing that. I don't have the time and you don't have the patience, likely, but one of the things that I struggle with is I struggle with getting outside of this. Do any of you struggle with that? All you can see is what's right here in front of you. Now, sometimes that's good. Sometimes it's good to block out all the things that are going on around us. But sometimes what the devil wants us to do, and it's the bondage that we find ourselves in, is he gets us to focus on one specific, particular thing. And that's all you can think about. It's all you can consider. Any of you ever broken a bone? I have. What happens when you break a bone? That's about all you can think about. You know, as I get older and things start hurting that I didn't know existed. I mean, I didn't know I had so many muscles in my back, but they all hurt now. And when they hurt, that's about all you can think about. And then all you want to think about is how bad your back feels. That's what the devil wants us to do, is to focus on the one thing. And the Jews here were focused on one thing, but think about what we can get focused on. Paul says, "Stand fast in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made you free, and be not entangled again in the yoke of bondage." That expression, "stand fast," is a very special one to me. Because "stand fast" is like a lot of other expressions that Paul uses that are irrespective of circumstance. You know, when he said, "Pray without ceasing," circumstance does not apply. You pray without ceasing no matter what. When he says, "Rejoice evermore," circumstance does not apply. When he says, "Abhor that which is evil and hold fast to that which is good," circumstance doesn't apply. There's never a season of life where those things don't apply. And you know what else should always be in season? Standing fast in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free. How is that always in season? It's always in season, friends, because when we get out of sight of just this, the thing that we're focused on, and we remember all the great and wonderful things that God has done, we realize that in comparison to all of this, this doesn't matter. in comparison to all the promises of God and all the rich grace that he's given unto us, this one little thing, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Whatever your little thing is, and whatever my little thing is, compared to God, it doesn't matter. Think about the thing that most of humanity struggles with the most. The second thing that humanity struggles with the most. Isn't this interesting? The second thing that humanity struggles with the most is dying. That's what people are second most scared of doing, dying. You know what number one is? Public speaking. More people would rather die than speak in public. Isn't that interesting? But anyway. So the second thing that humanity struggles with the most, dying. Paul goes through a glorious discourse on the resurrection in 1 Corinthians 15. And how does he finish that? Very last verse of 1 Corinthians 15, he says, "Be ye therefore steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord." In what season? Every season. Why? Because the resurrection is a reality that life does not change. It's a circumstance that all the other circumstances of life cannot overcome. I made mention, I think, last Sunday when I was here that I had a friend in college who was one of the nicest agnostics I've ever met. I mean, he was very nice about it. He was still wrong, but he was very nice about it. And I asked him one time, I said, "What do you think happens after you die?" He said, "I go back to dirt." I said, "I'm with you on that." I said, "What else happens?" He goes, "That's it." I said, "I'm not with you on that." And he said, "Are you trying to tell me that when your body goes back to dirt, that somehow or another that very same dirt is going to come up again?" I said, "That's exactly right." He said, "How can you believe that?" I said, "Because if God can speak to nothing and make something, God can speak to something and make it something else as it pleases him to do so. That's not a hard thing with God. It doesn't matter to him if it's been dust for 1,000 years, 10,000 years, or it just happened. He can make that dust and fashion into a body likened to his glorious body according to the same power whereby he's able to subdue all things unto himself. That being the reality, what does the rest of it matter?" It doesn't, Paul says. "Be ye therefore steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, as you know what manner of men we were among you for Christ's sake." Here he says, stand fast in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free. Don't be entangled again with all the snares that the devil throws at us. Whenever I go through life and the devil puts things in my path, you know, they always seem so big at the time. Does your little thing seem so big at the time? And then you look back and you're like, "What in the world was I all up in arms about?" We sang a song this morning. I wanted to sing it called "Thus Far the Lord Has Led Me On." And the second verse of that song gets me every time we sing it. "Much of my life has run to waste, and I perhaps am near my home. When I look back on my life and all the littered folly that has gone through my life, it's just one small thing that I treated like a big thing after another. But I'm so thankful," the verse finishes by saying, "but he forgives my follies past and gives me strength for days to come." All the things of today do not compare with what God has in store tomorrow. And all the things of today don't compare with the grace and the storehouse he has for today. One of the things that I tell people is you are going to look and act like the God that you serve. The Bible proves that. In Psalm 115, it tells us that we will act like the God that we serve. Because if we act like a God that is not a God, that's an idol, that has eyes that can't see, ears that can't hear, mouth that can't speak, hands that can't save, feet that can't deliver, if we serve that God, what's going to happen? We're going to be like him. We're going to have eyes that can't see, ears that can't hear, mouths that can't talk, hands that can't save, and feet that can't deliver. But if we serve a God, and we do, I trust, of grace, mercy, love, compassion, wisdom, righteousness, glory, and honor, what will that look like in our life? It'll look like grace, mercy, compassion, love, wisdom, righteousness, glory, and honor. And that's not the kind of glory we give ourselves, the honor we give ourselves. We don't have to worry about that, friends. He gives us the glory and the honor as it pleases him. He has supplied us with the grace to show grace unto our fellow man. As Paul would tell the Colossians in Colossians 4 and about verse 6, he says to speak and let your words always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man. Whenever you consider how we speak, how we move, how we live, how our being is in this world, are our eyes seeing, are our ears hearing, are our noses smelling, are our hands saving and our feet delivering? If they are, then we're acting like the God that we serve. And I'm going to tell you, friends, He has eyes that see everything. He has ears that hear everything. He has hands that can always save and feet that can always deliver. And because of that, friends, it doesn't matter what the thing is of today. Stand fast in liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free. And I tell you, it's not just a freedom that we're going to have when we're in heaven. It's a freedom for right now and today. There's a freedom that we can have that no matter what is going on in this whole world, we can say, come what may of joy or sorrow. The Lord is on my side, and I'll not be afraid of what man can do unto me. The Lord is my light and the strength of my life. And friends, when we see today that the Lord is still on His throne, that His grace abides forevermore, and that His mercy endures forever, I tell you what that does. It gives me the ability to stand in the hardest and the most difficult of times. I haven't always stood as I should, and I don't always walk as I ought to walk, but it's not a failure of His part to supply it. It's a failure on my part to exercise it. Going back to that song, fifth verse, faith in His name forbids my fear. Oh, may His presence ne'er depart. And in the morning, let me hear the love and kindness of His heart. When those dark nights come, friends, it's faith in His abiding name, His power, that'll get us through those dark times. Because I tell you, weeping will endure, but for a night. But joy, joy cometh in the morning, because in the morning, let me hear the love and kindness of His heart. I'm going to tell you something, friends. When those nights come, when those hard times come, remember that it's still time to stand fast, because we are still delivered right now. Not just in the world to come, but in the right now nasty nights that we go through in this world. Think about the liberty that we have. Not just in the knowledge of the finished work of Jesus Christ, but in the knowledge of His abiding presence, that I'll never leave thee nor forsake thee. I told you last weekend that I work for you. I work for John and Jane Doe Taxpayer. And we just got a whole new federal holiday. Did you know that? It happened really quick. If somebody says things can't move fast in the government, I watched it happen. They started talking about it one day. They voted on it the next day. And I was sending out, you know, notices to people that work for me saying, hey, tomorrow's a holiday. Don't come to work. Now, when all that happened, people asked me, they said, do you know what Juneteenth is? And I said, yeah. And they said, oh, never mind, you're from Texas. Of course you know. Well, my point is this. When you think about events like that, when you think about events like the last battle of the Civil War that was fought in Texas, when you think about warfare that has gone on after the war has already been finished, when the outcome has already been settled, those people on the battlefield, those people going through those circumstances, they didn't know that it had already been settled, but it was. And there are a lot of God's children who do not know that the battle has been settled. Aren't you glad you do? Aren't you glad to know and to be exercised in the wisdom that Christ has made us free from the law of sin and death, and He's also made us free from the temptations and trials of today, because everything we need, He's supplied with His grace to be able to stand. One last thought regarding that. If we know that the battle's been accomplished, may our lives look like it. Let me tell you something about your enemy and mine. The Bible tells us that that old dude knows he's lost. He knows it. Revelation 12 tells us he knows he's lost. And I don't think he sleeps in a bed, but just allow me the liberty of this metaphor. He gets up out of bed every morning and he fights like he could win. Contrast that with me, not you, me. I get up out of bed every morning and I know I've won, and I still fight like I could lose. Isn't that amazing? May our warfare, may our walk, and may our faith be with the liberty that we not only know we've won, but this looks like it's won. 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 And this looks like it's won. That when people see us, they don't see defeated, cast down people. They see courageous, faithful, righteous people who are standing fast in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free. As the brother prayed, and as we heard this morning at the breakfast table, I was very touched by Brother Jackson's prayer. I'm so thankful that we live in a land where we are free. But I'm also thankful that we can come to a house where we're told again how much freer we really are through the shed blood of Jesus Christ. May we never forget that. As we walk through the doors and we go back out in the world, may our lives look like the gospel we preach. And may people look at us and see us as the friends of God, a people who know the joyful sound and are glad when people say, "I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord." I have enjoyed being with you, not only last weekend, but this weekend. I think it probably surprised a few people because they were like, "You are coming back to the camp meeting, right?" Yes, Lord willing, we're coming back to the camp meeting. And do look forward to that very much. But I've enjoyed being with you, enjoyed worshiping with you, and trust the Lord will continue to go with you and bless you. May the Lord should bless you is my prayer.
Brother Philip was right and he was wrong. He was wrong in not doing what I asked him to do. But he was right that that message is certainly appropriate for July 4th. And 5th and 3rd, it's always appropriate. I won't take much time, and I think some of you believe that and some of you don't, but I'm not planning on taking much time. I'd like to share with you a parable. Don't talk about this subject often, but would had a desire to do it. I read this one time at the Thanksgiving meeting at Delhi when the different churches had met together, and didn't receive a real warm reaction to it, but that's okay. I still think it's true. Turn your Bibles, like to turn to the 18th chapter of Luke. And the Lord often spoke and taught in parables. And they were not complex normally. They were not complex parables. They were things that were active in the day in which he was talking and that people could understand, even if they couldn't relate to it. They could at least understand what he was saying. And sometimes they upset folks, and sometimes people rejoiced over. So the parable begins in verse 9. And the way I know it's a parable, because he says it is. So 18 and 9 of Luke. And he spake this parable unto certain which trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. That is normally what you see. Normally, if you see a person boasting or trusting in themselves, even to the point that they feel and promote a self-righteousness, then what often comes with that is despising others. They don't have an accurate view of themselves, nor do they have an accurate view of others. The way the world would refer to this is a win-lose proposition. I win, but for me to win, you have to lose. And you see that. Kind of expect it in certain places, but it has no place in the church. Now, if there's any example of that happening, it probably would be me more than anybody else. So I'm not picking on anybody. But like I've told you many times, if I wait until something is occurring in the church before I'm trying to preach on it, then I've probably waited too long. The time to do it is when it's not necessarily a problem. This can catch up on us. This is something that our nature can hang on to or can reach out and grasp without us even realizing that it's happening. And it can happen in good things. It could happen in our families. It could even happen in our church. We start comparing our church to other churches. That's not a good deal. It's never good to compare yourselves among yourselves, regardless of what we're talking about. Let's read the parable. Two men went up into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee and the other a publican. Now, oftentimes when I read this, I think of my dad. My dad was a staunch Democrat. That's just something else that I failed him at. But he was a very staunch Democrat. And I remember as I was trying to preach one day in his presence, I said Republican instead of publican. And he got up afterwards and he says, it was where he served, he got up afterwards and says, I demand equal time. That's what he said. I didn't mean to say Republican, I just did. What is a publican in the Bible? Do you know what a publican is? First of all, it's a Jew. It's a native Jew. But he works for the Romans. And the arrangement that he has with the Romans is kind of a cost-plus relationship. Because he has paid a sum to the government to be able to have the authority to collect customs and other taxes. But he gets to keep whatever in addition to what he paid that he receives. So it's cost plus without much limit on the plus. Cost plus is, it can be a good situation if you got a cap on the plus. But if you don't have a cap on the, I tell you, cost plus in the medical field is dangerous. Because they'll determine the plus, and it just keeps going, going, going. Now, a Pharisee was an absolute picture of self-righteousness. The way they dressed, the way they looked, who they trusted, and how they viewed other folks who were not Pharisees. But the rest of the Jews viewed publicans as a traitor. They're working for Rome. Plus, they're collecting our money. Plus, they're collecting more money than they have to collect to line their own pockets. Kind of a picture of a politician, isn't it? Can be. In fact, the Lord one time gave admonition to a publican that was wanting to follow after him. And he told him not to charge more than, I think it says expected, but I'm not sure. But in other words, not charge more than what you need to charge. So look at these two folks. They both went up to the temple to pray. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself. There's two problems with that. There's nothing wrong in just standing to pray if you humble yourself when you do it. But there's no reason to think that this Pharisee humbled himself. So not only did he stand physically, he stood emotionally. Here I am, standing on my own, in my own righteousness. And I'm going to pray, but I'm going to pray with myself. Why do that? Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank thee that I'm not as other men are. Really? Really? Can you imagine in church service somebody praying that? I'm thankful that I'm not as other men are. I'm this, and I'm this, and I'm this, and I'm sure thankful I'm not like you. I don't think I could keep my seat if that happened. I thank thee that I am not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. He's going to exact his labors now. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. I can just see him have a list. Check, check, check. Remember the widow? They cast in her mites. And the Lord honored her and said that she has given all. And the publican, standing afar off, would not so much as his eyes, I'm sorry, would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And that's all he said that we have record of. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this publican man, went down to his house justified rather than the other. For here's the lesson. For everyone that exalted himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. Now, there's a fake humility, and we're not interested in that. There's a humility that while they might say things or that normally would be classified as humble activity, we'll kind of look to see who's watching. That's not the type of humility. Where does humility come from? Where does it come from? That's right, Brother Gary. It comes right from the heart. What's accepted? 51st Psalms. What's accepted? What sacrifice does God accept? A contrite spirit. A humble heart. A contrite spirit. What causes us to do that? Well, look to, first of all, the hole of the pit from which thou art dug, and then to the rock to which thou art hewn. When we get a glimpse of just what we are by nature, when we start understanding what we deserve, when we know that we have a nature about us that is wicked, when we know that Christ died for us when we were yet enemies, Paul says in Corinthians this way, what have ye that ye did not receive? And if you received it, why boast ye as though ye received it not? My friends, anything you have of any value, You have it simply because, or we have it simply because of the grace of God. No, I earned it. No. What you've earned, my friends, is a place in hell. That's what you've earned. That's what I've earned. And save for the grace of God, that's exactly what I would get. But God's grace superabounds where sin abounded. And what we have because of a merciful and grace loving God. Can you think of any other, I've got to be careful not to say Republicans, any other publicans in the Bible? This one surprised me. You ever hear of Zacchaeus? He was a publican. But there's another publican that you don't hear much about. It's in Luke. And his name was Levi. It's over in the 5th chapter of Luke in the 27th verse. It says, "And after these things he went forth and saw a publican named Levi sitting at the receipt of custom." See, he's doing his publican job. "And he said unto him, Follow me." That's all he said. "And he left all, rose up, and followed him." Now, I would imagine all those folks that were looking at that, if there were any, were very surprised that that happened. First of all, very surprised that the Lord would ask him to follow him, and then very surprised that he did follow him. I imagine the publican was surprised that he followed him. But I tell you one that wasn't surprised, it was the Lord. That's what he told him to do, that's what he expected to do, and that's what he knew he would do. "And Levi made him a great feast in his own house." Now the hymns there are not Levi, he made the Lord. "And Levi made him," the Lord, "a great feast in his own house. And there was a great company of publicans and of others that sat down with them. But their scribes and Pharisees murmured against his disciples, saying, Why do you eat and drink with publicans and sinners? And Jesus answering said unto them, They that are whole need not a physician, but they that are sick. I came not to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." Now there's a lot of tongue-in-cheek in that statement. First of all, ain't no one whole. We're all undone. But there's folks that feel like they're whole. There's folks that feel that they have arrived, that they have made it. I once heard a young man, I don't know if Brother Tom heard it, he was with me when we both heard it, and a young man says, "I'm ready to make a name for myself." Okay. Not here. We don't need anybody that wants to make a name for themselves. What name would you want to make? Only name myself I want to make, my friends, is a sinner saved by grace. I'll make that claim by God's grace. Make a name for myself? Second, there's none righteous. No, not one. So they that are righteous are those who have convinced themselves that they are righteous. Let me just go two other places. Proverbs tells us. 16th chapter of Proverbs, the 18th verse tells us this. Pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Better it is to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. Our nature, my friends, is to be prideful. Our nature is to be haughty. Let us mortify the deeds of the body. Let us kill. Don't let that enter into our thought process. And I'm telling you, it can happen without us even realizing it's happening. It can happen with the camp meeting. It can happen, look, everybody's coming, look, oh, it's going to be. No. What happens if everybody comes except the Lord? It's going to be disastrous. I believe the Lord's going to be there. I prayed that the Lord's going to be there, as you have. But if we have a good meeting, it's not because everybody's here. It's because the Lord's here. And if the Lord's here, He's not here because we deserve Him to be here. He's here because He chose to be here. I've often said, if I have a preference as to whether the Lord be here at a big meeting or be here at our little old regular meetings, I prefer it be our little old regular meetings. We need Him. We need Him in our lives. We need Him in our services. We need to be as such of a people that when a person does have a prideful spirit, it just shows out because it's so different than everyone else. I think I want this scripture. Let me go see if this is the one I want. Fifth chapter of 1 Peter. I'll close with this. Fifth verse. Likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Yea, all of you, be subject one to another. You know, it's hard to get in trouble when that's the situation. Yea, all of you, be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility. For God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon Him, for He careth for you. I tell you, my friends, humility flows from a heart that's been tendered by grace. Humility flows when love begins to swell and abound in our heart. When we recognize what we are by nature and then what God has blessed us with in spite of that. What have you that you did not receive? Anything of any value. Much rather a place to call home. As I was thinking about this morning, I started numbering the number of churches I've been a member of. I hadn't done that. In fact, I didn't know. I had to count it up. I didn't know. This is the sixth church that I've been a member of. That means there have been times, my friends, when I kind of didn't really belong where I was and didn't know where I was going. I tell you, I pray to God. I pray to God that doesn't happen again. But there are other times when I knew where I was and I knew where I was going. And it wasn't that I was upset at the folks where I was. I just needed to be another place. A move, perhaps. Sometimes it wasn't even me moving. It was Mom and Dad moving. But whether it's six, I asked Brother Tom to confirm this morning. This is the only place he's ever been a member of. This is it. No other place. Whether that's your experience. Now, if you've been a member of 20 churches, I think we might need to talk. But my point is this. All six places, the Lord has blessed me. I found a home. I found a home. How thankful are you for that? Brother Tom? There's other. I don't know enough of your history. Sister Martha Ann, probably you're that way. Some of you that, Sister Bev, some of you that joined, then moved off for good reason. It was what, Houston, and then First Church, and then back. You know, a lot of folks don't make it back to where they started. And then when they do, they don't find it home. She has. Sister Sue, only place she's been is here. Home. Sister Amanda, I guess this is it, isn't it? Home. I love to visit. I love to come home. I tell you what, last night, I slept better than I have slept since Thursday. Why? Because I was home. It's with the same woman the whole time. I know. We were there the whole time. Just wasn't home. But to be home and know it. Brother John has just experienced. Brother John Hall has just experienced a strange thing. He was a member of a church for many years. California. But you know what? Through the Lord's mercy and through your graces and welcoming him, I believe he feels home here. In short order. May God bless us to recognize that, that is a great, great blessing. I don't know what else to say, so I'm not going to say anything. As we stand and sing a hymn, we offer an opportunity for membership. Should anyone here desire to join Bethel Church, come, give me your hand. We'd be glad to wait upon you as well. Somebody have a selection.
502.
502. Is that here in the vineyard?
Yes.
502. After the first verse or so, we'll take the right hand fellowship on the front.